We took the train to Lausanne from Montreux. Looking out the window toward where we had lived, you could not see the mountains for the clouds. The train stopped in Vevey, then went on, passing the lake on one side and on the other the wet brown fields and the bare woods and the wet houses. We came into Lausanne and went into a medium-sized hotel to stay. It was still raining as we drove through the streets and into the carriage entrance of the hotel. The concierge with brass keys on his lapels, the elevator, the carpets on the floors, and the white washbowls with shining fixtures, the brass bed and the big comfortable bedroom all seemed very great luxury after the Göttingens. The windows of the room looked out on a wet garden with a wall topped by an iron fence. Across the street, which sloped steeply, was another hotel with a similar wall and garden. I looked out at the rain falling in the fountain of the garden. Catherine turned on all the lights and commenced unpacking. I ordered a whiskey and soda and lay on the bed and read the papers I had bought at the station. It was March 1918, and the German offensive had started in France. I drank the whiskey and soda and read while Catherine unpacked and moved around the room. "You know what I have to get, darling," she said.
"What?"
"Baby clothes. There aren't many people reach my time without baby things."
"You can buy them."
"I know, that's what I'll do tomorrow. I'll find out what is necessary."
"You ought to know, you were a nurse."
"But so few of the soldiers had babies in the hospitals."
"I did."
She hit me with a pillow and spilled the whiskey and the soda. "I'll order you another," she said. "I'm sorry I spilled it."
"There wasn't much left. Come on over to the bed."
"No, I have to try and make this room look like something."
"Like what?"
"Like our home.
Hang out the Allied flags."
"Oh, shut up."
"Say it again."
"Shut up."
"You say it so cautiously," I said, "as though you didn't want to offend anyone."
"I don't."
"Then come over to the bed."
"All right."
She came and sat on the bed.
"I know I'm no fun for you, darling. I'm like a big flour barrel."
"No, you're not. You're beautiful and you're sweet."
"I'm just something very ungainly that you've married."
"No, you're not. You're more beautiful all the time."
"But I will be thin again, darling."
"You're thin now."
"You've been drinking."
"Just whiskey and soda."
"There's another one coming," she said.
"And should we order dinner up here?"
"That would be good."
"Then we won't go out, will we? We'll just stay in tonight."
"And play," I said.
"I'll drink some wine," Catherine said. "It won't hurt me. Maybe we can get some of our old white Capri."
"I know we can," I said. "They'll have Italian wines at a hotel this size."
The waiter knocked at the door. He brought the whiskey in a glass with ice, and beside the glass, on a small tray, a bottle of soda.
"Thank you," I said. "Put it down there. Will you please have dinner for two brought up here and two bottles of dry white Capri and ice?"
"Do you wish to commence your dinner with soup?"
"Do you want soup, Cat?"
"Please,
bring soup for one."
"Thank you, sir."
He went out and shut the door. I went back to the papers and the war in the papers and poured the soda slowly over the ice into the whiskey. I would have to tell them not to put the ice in the whiskey. Let them bring the ice separately. That way you could tell how much whiskey there was and it would not suddenly be too thin from the soda. I would get a bottle of whiskey and have them bring ice and soda. That was the sensible way. Good whiskey was very pleasant. It was one of the pleasant parts of life.
"What are you thinking, darling?"
"About whiskey."
"What about whiskey?"
"About how nice it is."
Catherine made a face.
"All right," she said.